This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. I'm Tad. In the studio today with me are Fiona and Paul, and we've got a special guest today. We're about to talk about our little surprise package that we've got coming in. And
that's right.
It should be a bit of fun.
Yeah. Well, we are very lucky to have Ethan in the studio. Yeah. He is from July Luggage, which is an Australian luggage brand. Now, you know, it's a very, very sexy luggage brand.
It is.
It looks gorgeous. How long? I'm glad that we could get you into the studio.
We're glad
to
you
talk
like
about it.
I'm glad you like it. We made it for you.
Oh, excellent. Well, I love traveling and I love luggage. Are there many Australian luggage brands?
There aren't too many. I think it represents our possibly our population, but there's a couple. There's been a couple of good ones over the last few years.
But we don't want to talk about them, though.
We don't want to talk about them. We won't mention them by name. But the biggest one is the one we all sort of have come to know, and they've actually gobbled up a lot of other brands. So you don't come to realise that almost 90% of the market share is the larger. One of the larger brands out there, and they just dominate. And they dominate through cheap manufacturing and mass distribution. And so that's what we're here to change.
Oh, I love it. Disruption in luggage.
Yeah. And the luggage is made in Melbourne, is that right?
It's designed in Melbourne.
Designed in Melbourne, okay.
Made from parts all over the world. German shells in China. We've got some great Chinese partners for the wheels and handles. And then Japanese zips and components.
Oh, cool.
So it's a global product.
Yeah.
So
just I've never heard of July Luggage, so my apologies, Ethan. But just give us a reason. Why is it so special? What's in the design that makes it so unique?
The biggest thing is the design and the business model. So what we... that's definitely not it. just saying, just a Google. No, the biggest thing is in the business model. So the entire industry is propped up on making it as cheap as possible in all travel accessories, making it as cheap as possible, and then distributing it as far as you can in easy to access places. So places like retail malls and in the airport. They want to get it as cheap as possible so that they can mark it up significantly at around 85 to 90% so that you can then buy it at 50% off, which is where you usually walk in and you're like, oh, this Samsonite looks great. It's $800 on sale for $400. What a bargain. They're still making a significant amount of money on that and it probably costs them around $30 to make.
Wow.
So the idea is that you're paying $400 for a product that is definitely not worth it. Mm. As a direct-to-consumer brand, we cut out all the middlemen. We don't retail out through other retailers, and we do it all ourselves. So it means that we can put all the money back into manufacturing. It means you're getting a significantly higher quality suitcase.
Yeah.
Like if we were to retail through traditional channels, it'll end up being a $1,200 case. But it's not. It's $295.
Yeah.
So it means that we can just provide a higher quality, better customer service, and control the entire experience.
And it has quite a few special features to it, like, for example, the USB ports and the charging ports. And the important thing to know is that a lot of times, you know, if you're going to check that baggage, if it has a battery, you're not allowed to check it in the belly of the plane. But your battery is actually removable.
That's right. Yeah. So
which is important.
It's actually a big feedback point. We get a lot of comments. Oh, you can't take it onto a plane. Yep. It's illegal now. What's happened since the Samsung Galaxy saga where the phones blew up? What ends up happening is anything with a battery, so a mobile phone, laptop, or in our case, luggage, it can't be in cargo because if it catches on fire, the plane will go down.
Yeah.
Nobody can access the cargo to put it out. Whereas if it catches on fire in the cabin, the staff can...
Fire extinguishers there. Yeah,
exactly. They can get to it. Yeah. And so it's just a real simple thing of you just need to take the batteries onto the plane with you.
Yeah.
So it's anywhere you can take a phone, you can take a bag or one of our bags.
Yeah, but you just have to take the battery out and have the battery in your carry-on.
That's right, yeah. If you want to check it in, you just press it out. It's one of the features. Actually, very interesting story. There's this range of growth of smart luggage around 3 years ago where they all had developed, these companies developed a lot of luggage, a lot of brands around having a battery component in there, but they integrated the battery in, as you would from a product design perspective. You would integrate those batteries in because it looks cleaner and nicer and there's no real need to take it out. Mm. What ended up happening was the industry changed. The airline industry said, well, after the Samsung issue, well, there's no way we're putting these into cargo anymore. And you had these brands with around 10 containers worth of stock that they couldn't sell anymore. And they all went out of business.
Yeah.
There's a couple of brands that survived due to, you know, they had you know, a lot of cash in the bank. But the reality is that it cleaned out most of them. So we've come through based on those designs and gone, well, you know, we're not going to do that.
And the lesson is you don't always want to be an early adopter of something because it changes.
That's true. That's true. Just with a Steve Bradbury of luggage, you know, we just come through and seen everybody else fall down.
I think it's wonderful that there's more Australian-designed product in this particular space. I read about you guys because your co-owner of the company has been out talking about the experience, talking about the luggage as well. And I was so astonished to find out more about this smart luggage with, you know, the batteries in it, which I never knew anything about. And I was like, why doesn't my suitcase have that?
We can upgrade you. It's
Absolutely. So how long has July been running for?
We've been around since... we launched formally in February. We're very, very new. I mean, we got together, started having coffees and designing the case in July. That's not the reason why we called it that. Actually, the reason, the name behind the business is actually because it's the best time of year to travel for Aussies. The world as well, but Aussies in particular love to migrate.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds you of Barcelona, Paul, and everyone else is in Europe, right? So we're not. We're trying to absorb as much sun as we can here in Melbourne, but... Aussies love to travel in July. It's always a fun month to get away, and we find ourselves in that perfect little spot in the middle of the year. Christmas is hectic, and July is always lovely.
And I guess if you're looking at a northern hemisphere, July is a very popular time.
You're all on summer holidays.
Yeah. All on summer holidays. Yeah. So, you know, win-win all round.
Yeah, why would you want to go off to Europe this time of year? The sunshine's amazing. The food's amazing. It's only a quick hop on a plane.
Yeah.
And you can take some great luggage with you. Why not?
Oh, and look good at the airport.
Absolutely. You know,
that's the important thing.
Now, we are going to go travelling now with Aethan.
We are.
And where are we going?
I think we're going to go to the Greek Isles.
I think we're going to the Greek Islands. Now
it's very Europe themed.
It is very Europe themed. Well, I do have some friends that are currently in the Greek Islands, and I've been watching endless photographs of the blue sea and the vision of the islands on the social media.
They are pretty stunning.
They are gorgeous. Ethan, tell us about your favourite places in Greece, and you were there recently.
I was there recently. We've just had a kid, so the last few months have been in no travel lockdown. So the last place we went to before my wife had the child, we was Greece. We went to Mykonos, and it was low. We did a lot of the Greek islands.
Yep.
Mykonos was the main destination, but actually the magic was around the smaller places. We had so much fun in the little hidden islands, and discovered some actually beautiful restaurants and places. So it really is quite magic.
I was in Mykonos a year ago, May, I think it was, and had the best time. It was first time there. It was amazing. Really liked it.
I mean,
it's beautiful.
The Cyclades, I think, was that group of islands.
Yeah.
There. I mean, it is a little slice of magic in Europe, so it is quite unique and different from everything else. And you can understand, it feels like the land of the gods when you're there.
Yeah.
And it transports you back in history. And that, I think it's a stunning place.
Very special. I mean, pretty much no matter where you are, it's just a view. You know, it's incredible.
It's always nice.
Yeah.
It's always nice. And the food, there's something about that food that, you know, Mediterranean food, not just Greece, you know, just all over the region.
Yep.
It's actually stunning.
Special.
It feels like you can just eat it and eat it and nothing happens.
Yeah, that's good.
You eat and you drink and you come back happy.
It's the sunshine and the salty air. The two things actually combine to make it taste different, I'm sure.
Yeah,
it helps.
So, Ethan, tell us about some of the smaller spaces that you discovered.
There's... Well, I tell you what we did. A friend of mine started this yacht renting business.
Whoa! So what a great gig!
I'm telling you now, he's geared his life to be, you know, amazing. When in retirement, he's going to live well. I think this guy, and he organised for us to rent a boat and a skipper, so that somebody actually knew what they were doing on the boat.
That's a good thing.
It's a good thing. It's a mandatory, some would say. and we went around the smaller islands and just, you know, we spent 7 days stopping at little places in order to get to Mykonos at the end. And some of the best islands. I mean, one of them in particular was called Koufonissia, which is Koufonissia. Koufonissia. I can say it more Greek if you like, and Koufonissia.
That's good.
There you go.
Authentic.
And there's Kato Koufonissia, which is the bottom part of Koufonissia, and it's beautiful because it really is untouched, and it's one of the few places you're allowed to camp for free in Greece. And but there's this restaurant on top of the hill. There's no electricity in the bottom part of the island, and the restaurant runs on a generator. It's the only place that has any kind of power.
Right.
They kill one animal for the night. And everybody eats what it's killed that night. And you're sitting under the stars. At midnight, they turn the lights off, but everyone still stays around.
Yeah.
People pull out the guitars. You're drinking this drink, which I have no idea what's in it, but it's honey and alcohol. It's called Racomelo. And it is phenomenal because it just tastes like honey.
Is it kind of like a honey mead?
It could be, yeah. I don't know.
It's kind of like a honey mead, which is sort of like a beer style of brewing, but it's a honey mead.
It felt like a vodka style
spirit.
Ooh, yeah.
It felt spirity, but let's say like 25% spirit and then like 75% amazing. And
you can't go wrong.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that formula, you know. And I don't know where they're getting the amazing from, but it was nice. And it's just magic memories of sitting under the stars, drinking and eating.
And
that for me was Greece, you know. And all these little islands had something special to them, especially if you go at the right time. A lot of the locals, from my understanding, the Greeks aren't big travelers. The Greeks from Greece now aren't big travelers outside of Greece. They're preferring to go back to their villages and making those places a bit more holiday-like.
Mm.
And so they're going back to the little places and making them feel more amazing. And it felt it, you know, you sort of step in there as an outsider and you're instantly put into the world, into their world of dancing and eating. And they want to have a good time because a week later they're going back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the best part of a holiday, really, when you can just, you know, enjoy the smaller things. You know what I mean? Like that kind of the food, the music, and just immerse yourself into it.
It's an uncomplicated holiday, really.
Yeah.
It's an uncomplicated way to relax. And certainly you're not racing around going to, not that there's anything wrong with racing around going to museums things like that, but it's that kind of holiday where you can immerse yourself in a little town or in a community and just get to know other people and get to know yourself just by chilling out.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You mentioned quite a few islands that you have visited recently in Greece. Are you a regular visitor to Greece? Because obviously you are of Greek origin.
I am, which makes the name difficult to say. I go regularly. I feel like Greeks go to Greece a lot. I feel like they're not very, typically speaking, they're not very big explorers, or if they do, they always come back. I do go to Greece a bit, mainly because I have friends there. And it makes it a lot easier to go because they're always there.
Fantastic thing. I mean, there are, of course, the endless amounts of beautiful islands to explore, established ones like Mykonos, but also discovering new islands. But, of course, Athens itself is just an incredible
destination.
Yeah. I've only been once, but we've had someone else on this program who has a business where he and his partner partner. So he is Greek, but his partner is Australian and he lives there and they have a business with accommodation. So it's like an Airbnb, but it's their own business. And they also renovate beautiful old homes because they find these old, beautiful Bauhaus-style apartments and things like that, and they actually have been renovating them and bringing some unloved homes and apartments back to life and then renting them out to tourists.
What a great business.
In Athens.
Yeah, what a great idea.
Fantastic idea. And they really specialise in Athens as well, instead of, you know, they don't do all the islands.
Yeah.
He was talking about the fantastic component of Athens is that it's because it's been under, because of the lack of economic growth in the area, so much of the old city has been retained and it hasn't been swarmed with mass market brands, and so it still feels like it's quite an authentic city.
You definitely get that vibe from Athens is a living museum, you know. You sort of walk around and there's still old stuff everywhere. You never have to go to a museum in Athens because it is literally everywhere.
Yeah.
I think one of the coolest things when they were doing the renovations for the renovations. It's not a house. When they were doing the build for the Olympics, when they were digging for the train stations, any artifacts that they found within that area of the build actually are now on display for free at all the major city train stations that they built, which I thought was absolutely very, very cool of them to do.
You have to think, though, no matter what they would do, any kind of digging, there'd always be something they would find, just to the history, it'd be, you know, fascinating, the different things.
Well, when you walk around, you know, you're on a Greek island and you're walking around the back streets and taking some little trails, you can sort of see in people's yards bits of Roman ruins
and a bit of a
column on the side here, which has turned into a fence, and then you've got a pot plant on it. And so you can see bits and pieces everywhere, and I just think that's quite fascinating and gorgeous.
All over Europe is like that. In southern Italy in particular, they've got some beautiful ruins that they've kept around. Even Croatia's just stunning place.
Very stunning.
Very untouched.
I think you hit a nail on the head earlier. You know, you're talking about the economic crisis that Greece has gone through in the last few years. I mean, people decided not to travel internationally, they'd leave the borders of Greece.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's given it a rejuvenation internally, because the Greeks have actually stayed at home, i.e. within the country, and gone back to their hometowns, gone back to their islands.
Spent their money there.
Reinvested the money in their own country, which is demonstrated. I think what you're getting some of the more tourist places that are now cropping up that were probably a bit quieter, but are being rejuvenated by those local communities. Mm.
That is actually a wonderful side effect of what was, you know, obviously a very terrible time for Greece. Where are you from in Greece? What island or part of Greece? You're from the mainland or?
Mum's from the south, dad's from the north. That's probably the easiest way to put that one together. We don't go back. Nowhere fun, in other words.
Nowhere
near as fun as the Cyclades Islands or anywhere around there.
Yeah.
We don't go home much.
So the Cyclades Islands, where are they sort of situated? I mean, I've only ever been to the Dodecanese, which for whatever reason I went there because I knew someone who lived there.
Oh, right. That's
quite
cool.
Which is a bit random. Yeah. But so
beautiful as well, though.
Oh, it is. Oh, it's a bit untouched, not very well visited. Yeah. I think that you've got Potmos, which is where St. John wrote the Apocalypse. And Samos is one of the other islands up there.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Right near Turkey.
Nice. I haven't been that far.
It's the only part I've been to, as well as Athens.
Yeah. Athens is great. The Cyclades Islands are fantastic.
So where are they in the scheme of things?
They are on the east of Greece, so to the east of Athens, in the bottom bit.
Are they very far? Do you know, if you want to catch a ferry there, are they far, or do most people fly?
You fly to Athens and you catch a ferry to each island, which is definitely the easiest. The Greeks aren't the most organised, so you bring a good book with you, so you can read at the ferry terminals while you wait. But they're sort of all interconnected by ferries, and it's just Once you're getting there is a bit of a pain, but once you're there, it's absolutely.
But you're on holidays usually when you're traveling, so it's not that, you know, it doesn't matter really.
You're just lucky, you have a beer and life goes on.
You'll get there.
So I know that, you know, when everyone goes to Greece, they want to experience the fantastic Greek food. In some cases, I mean, how have you seen in your regular trips, how, you know, has there been any kind of innovations in Greek food, or how are they incorporated? Are they, you know, it's still very traditional, but what else is happening in that particular sort of area that's sort of rejuvenating?
Yeah, I, from a food perspective, I know Athens in particular has been quite progressive with their food. The restaurants are world class, just without the marketing, so to speak.
Yeah,
you know, I think actually one of the best coffee baristas in the world is from Athens as well. So actually the best coffee barista in the world by title is actually in Athens. So they're quite a progressive food nation, but they're still stuck. There's still an element of it where it's just lamb chops and tomatoes.
A grilled octopus, don't forget.
And the grilled octopus spread through, you know, which is what everybody wants, you know. Yeah. It's like with any restaurant, and you'd be able to tell me as well, like there's the stuff that you want to cook.
Yeah.
And there's the stuff that people continue to order.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, everybody wants the BLT, but, you know, there's 10 other things on the menu that you like that you actually enjoy to cook.
And nobody will be taking the grilled octopus off of the menu anytime soon.
Exactly. The dips, the breads, all those things people still love. Mm. But from a progressive standpoint, you know, they've evolved. Athens in particular is such a modern city now that the restaurants are definitely world class and a lot more modernized, you know, maybe to the detriment of some heritage, but there's always an element in there.
But I think it's a situation too where people do want simplicity in food now. Like, you know, there was a trend toward fine dining, and that you see that starting to change now, even in Melbourne, you know. Mm. But I think it's that simplicity in the quality of the ingredients. You know, you eat a tomato, you want to taste the tomato, you know. And I think you know, we lose that in some cases.
I mean, it's definitely like the economic situation. We talk about the village. The village style lifestyle is a real thing, and they're going back to the villages and arguably, you know, having to learn the sort of primary production processes again. Yeah. So it's things like knowing how to kill a chicken live to prepare it for dinner, which is something that we don't do in the modern world.
Yeah.
These are people who are now going back to the villages, learning those old school techniques again, bringing it back and offering it as part of their cuisine.
And cheese making and all that kind of stuff that, you know, that we use as ingredients to create bigger dishes. But I mean, it's that simplicity of each of those special ingredients and you know, combining them with other special ingredients, or the olives or the olive oil, you know, all that kind of thing.
There's legacy, you know? Right?
Yeah.
The heirloom. They're all heirloom. Heirloom seeds, heirloom. Like it's all classic.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it even more fun for anybody traveling.
Yeah.
Once you arrive, it's a new world. You know, you know a tomato, but do you know it like this? And you taste the oil and you taste the legacy of the history behind all that.
And it's that's part of the flavor.
That's
do you know what I mean? Like it's knowing that, you know, that makes it that much more special, I think. And and it's interesting too, like, you know, that old statistic that, you know, the largest Greek community outside of Athens is in Melbourne, which is pretty special too, you know, and, you know, I think we're pretty lucky from that point of view in Melbourne because we get a lot of that authentic, you know, style food, ingredient simplicity here, which, you know, you get that at home, which is great.
Yeah, no, it is great. Jim's Greek Tavern's fantastic.
Yeah.
Still a classic, still enjoy it.
Definitely, yeah, it's good.
And they have a very cute little cocktail bar at the back.
Yeah.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. joy.org.au.
What's the most thing that people get wrong about Greece in general?
Good question, Ted.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of you know, maybe rhetoric, if that's the right word, you know, and it's just an untruth, you know.
I think the one thing, and it's a tricky answer because I am Greek, and I see it as both an Australian and I can see it from as much as I can, a local perspective as well. And the idea that Greece can sometimes it's divided into the Mykonoses of of Greece. So you do the Mykonos, the Santorini. It's a different world to what really happens to the rest of Greece.
Yeah.
And the rest of Greece is just as amazing, and the food is arguably better.
Yeah.
And the experiences are phenomenal as well. But there is a divide as to Greece. Is the churches on the hill that are painted white.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to get a donkey up to the souvlaki joint and everything's going to be fantastic, you know, and we're going to drink some white volcanic wine and call it a night.
Yeah.
So there's that side, but then there's a real proudness of the Greek people on everything else, the legacy, the history, the food, the destinations, all that still exists. But most tourists don't get to see it.
Mm. There's a lot to be proud of, though. I mean, even just to the point of it being the birthplace of democracy. I mean, we wouldn't have democracy if it weren't for, you know, Greek civilization, you know.
And that's what we like to say.
No, but it's true. But it's true, you know.
Well, you know, I would like to suggest that everyone reads an incredible book.
Yeah.
About Apollo, that is not a brand new book. It was put out about 2012, a fantastic book about Apollo and his love, the love of his life.
Yep.
And they were, you know, the way the story goes, his partner or his boyfriend was just was a prince from another family, but he was exiled, and he meets Apollo and as children, and they develop this incredible passion and love, and it is a brilliant book.
Okay, cool.
So I will I'll Google the name of the writer. Everyone should check it out. It's a beautiful book.
Oh, fascinating.
When did you read this?
Just like last week.
Oh, really?
Oh, right.
Yeah, recent. Okay. I just sort of came upon it on my e-reader.
In preparation for today? Or?
Well.
I was supposed to say yes.
And I have shared this with another friend of mine who is also a great reader, and she concurred. It's a brilliant book.
Okay.
Right.
So if everyone wants to get a bit of Greek, a fix of Greece, if you can't go there for the summertime.
Yep.
We'll give it a go.
Do it.
We'll give it a go.
Well, so where do you guys like to go? Where was the last trip you went?
Well, we're all travel bugs.
Yeah. For me, the last trip I was in 2 weeks ago was Bali.
Oh, nice.
But it was quick. Yeah.
Is that the tan, is it? Is that where that colour's coming in?
Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
It's fading, though. but I spent the last year travelling all over, which has been amazing. So I went to, obviously, Greece, Malta, Spain, Israel, Thailand, 4 trips to the United States to see my family in New York, and went to Cuba, Mexico, and around the United States.
Cuba's cool, right?
It's amazing, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I've always wanted to go to Cuba. As an American, was never allowed to, but went in on my Australian passport this time at this stage, so got around that small issue.
Nice.
But yeah, so I think it's, you know, it's important, but it's also important to travel with nice luggage that you.
It's really important to travel with nice luggage.
You bring it around to that, you know. You have to look good at the airport.
Absolutely, and you know, I'm a massive fan of carry-on. I just want to travel with carry-on. I hate queuing.
Big trend at the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hate queuing, and I'd rather just take less clothes and carry on and just go in and then out.
I overpack, though. That's my problem. Pack way too much.
But I think if you thought you could get a case on carry-on, you probably would reevaluate perhaps that. Because also,
I know, but the problem, sorry.
With disposable clothing now, it's not a great thing to buy stuff just to chuck it away.
No.
But you can always get something at the destination you're going to.
Absolutely.
If you think you've forgotten something, or the weather changes, or you need it for a specific event. Because I used to be pretty bad. Now I think I just chuck in as little as I can.
I know. I don't know, with my membership, as a frequent flyer, you're allowed to bring, like, you know, 2 suitcases. So you do it because it's, you know, it's not going to cost you anything. Yeah, but the problem is that once you get to Europe or your destination and you're, changing to another airline, that's when you come into a problem because usually a lot of the airlines in Europe are lower cost ones and you know, you get into problems with your excess luggage and things like that. But it is a bit of a pain. But especially if you're traveling into the summer, you know, summer clothes are pretty
Summer's busy. Okay. You do carry on with summer.
Yeah.
Winter's tough.
Yeah.
Winter's really tough.
Look, I always pack a small sort of bag that is actually a stuff sack that you could fit in your carry-on, and then when you go back, you just sort of stuff a few extra things in that, and then you sort of conveniently sort of put it behind your back so that they don't really see you when you're checking in. Yeah. And you try to get on board with more than one piece of carry-on.
I have seen a jacket that acts as a bag as well. So you wear the bag.
That is.
And then you can take it off, and it's a backpack. So,
And sometimes I have been known to pack things up and ship them back to Australia if I've bought a few things.
Yep.
You know, if you buy a carpet in Iran or something like that, you can actually ship things back and then still keep your carry-on. I mean, it's really smart.
Well, the other thing too is, I mean, a lot of, and not so much internationally, but domestically, they're really becoming strict about the carry-ons, like 7 kilos.
Particularly the budget airlines in Australia.
Yeah, like they are full on. And I actually got hit because my flight to Bali was via Sydney, and I basically, you know, had to pay excess carry-on baggage, which was annoying, but... you know, I had 15 kilos that I was carrying on board. I think the allocation was 7.
You need the jacket bag.
Yes.
Let's just come back to Greece again. Just if people were thinking of going over to Greece for a summer holiday, Ethan, where would you suggest perhaps they would go to get a real slice of summer Greek holiday?
Yeah, there's 3 islands I'd recommend. I'd stick to the Cyclades. There's 3 key islands. And then you can always eventually get to, the Mykonos and the Santorinis. But Antiparos is one. Antiparos is absolutely beautiful. A lot of the bougainvilleas, the beautiful pink flowers just crawling over everything. Everything's quite picturesque. The food's amazing. The people are great. There's another one called Sifnos. Okay. Sifnos is another fantastic place where it's actually probably just like any other island, but I had quite a magical food experience there. So it's got a special place in my heart. Where we ate in this restaurant. It was a family restaurant. Everyone who worked there was part of the family. And we sat under probably one of the biggest pear trees I've ever seen. And it was just magic. I think that's it. That's all it is. It was just beautiful handmade food under a pear tree. It was lovely. Absolutely lovely.
That's great.
And then Koufounisia. I would highly recommend going to Koufounisia because it's probably 2 years away from being a very trendy place. But right now it's still low key.
Untouched. Yeah,
and it's very cool. And find that restaurant. I can't remember what it's called. Just type in Koufounisia
Pear Tree.
The other one. No, this is the no electricity one. This is Koufounisia no electricity restaurant. Hard to find. I'm sure that's
it'll come up.
I'm sure that's the Google term that I would use, and it will come up and go and visit and go and have some of that honey drink. That'd be great.
That sounds incredible.
It does.
Ethan, what packing tips would you have? Because we've been talking about carry-on. When you travel, obviously, you know, now you have a little one, you'll be travelling with lots more bags. But what are your tips for packing? And you know, how do you do it if you travel a lot?
Well, before I was in the travel industry, I was a horrible packer.
Okay.
I was a horrible packer. I'm a reformed packer. I used to just stuff it all in and take, you know, really the wrong combinations of things as well. You know, so I'd over-index for underwear. I'd have a lot of underwear.
Yeah.
But only one T-shirt. I don't understand how that works how it used to work in my head. But I'd be like, I'm going to be changing at least 4 pairs of underwear a day. But the T-shirt's fine. The T-shirt, I get some mileage out of that one. So I don't know why I used to do that. And I've been known to go to the shops with an empty bag, fill the bag at the shop, and then leave straight to the airport after that. So I didn't have to do any washing. Not good. I've since changed my ways.
This is good news. I'd also love to know not only how you changed your ways, but who helped you change your ways.
It's been a mix of things. I think just being more aware of the different ways of doing things, and actually caring about now whether folding or rolling is actually makes a difference or not.
Woohoo! And so do you fold or roll?
I've become a folder. I'm a folder.
Oh, controversial.
Yeah. I know most people are liking the roll at the moment. It's very, very Kondo-esque to roll things.
Yeah.
And it's good. Rolling's really good for selection. So here's my answer. It's not one or the other that's better in my view. Rolling's really good for a good idea of a selection, and folding's really good to pack more volume in.
Okay. I also think as well, I often roll for the edges. So you put stuff flat in the middle and then you pad stuff out around the edges just to make sure you secure that space.
I do think it needs to be a combination, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Some things need to be rolled because they can, and then you don't want to be rolling your jackets. You want to fold them, sit them nicely on top. Right.
Yeah, and some things you want to roll to keep the creases out, and in plastic, that helps.
Another good tip is just to stuff things inside of other things. So make sure, you know, if you're putting shoes in there, don't leave all that air space. Fill it with socks or fill it with underwear just to make sure every inch is used.
So you guys all combo are you combo packers?
I combo,
I'm a combo packer, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find at the end of the trip I'm rolling more because I'm on the way home and I'm like, get it in. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't really matter at that point. I'm just trying to squish as much in.
But
on the way over it was more considered.
I've been like shown the new world of packing cubes. Do you guys
yes,
use packing
I
cubes
do.
At all?
Yeah. Oh no.
It is a game changer. It just makes things so much nicer.
Is it wrong to use a packing cube?
No, it's just that I just haven't actually, I mean I've only just discovered packing cubes just
good.
Lately.
I love them.
Yeah, they're great, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a new world thing. Yeah. It is it
so
keeps everything.
How
organized.
Many packing cubes might you use in one suitcase?
You want to use 4 to 6, I think. One for the shoes. Like you usually do it right. So all your toiletries are in a bag, and then your shoes are typically in a bag, and then maybe like a nice top or something's in a bag. So you're kind of half doing it anyway. So if you formalize everything else into cubes as well, it's a game changer.
Yeah, wow. I categorize mine.
Oh, wow, really? That's new for me. Actually,
I do.
I heard of these things, but never really knew what they were for.
Really?
Yeah. Does July sell?
That's great.
Do you have a cubes?
Not yet.
But you're going to bring in cubes?
Well, just because they're so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not vacuum sealed, though.
They're not vacuum sealed. No. Okay. No, not vacuum sealed.
Because then you'd need a vacuum.
It's not a bad idea, actually. Yeah.
Well, then you'd need your own little mini vacuum cleaner, and that would take up extra space.
Oh, no, it's not that sort of cube. No.
But what if you did a little hand, you know?
Oh, hand pump.
Hand pump one.
There's going to be an app for that, isn't there? You plug something in.
Yeah, you could plug
I'm heading to the factory right now. We're going to get this made.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
We were talking just before the break about those luggage cubes that you can get as well as part of your luggage paraphernalia. Mm. And I don't know if it's ever happened to you guys. It has happened to me in the past where you're waiting for your luggage on the carousel and all of a sudden you see one of your pairs of socks going by and then something else that's yours and you're like, hang on a second. That has happened to me. Those cubes actually help for that to not happen because a whole cube's not going to come out. And if it does, at least it's all contained, you know?
Yeah. Very true. Very
true. So, yeah,
that's where that lost sock gets to.
Yeah, that's right.
I've lost dignity on the carousel. I don't think I've lost luggage.
No, you don't want to lose anything, you know?
You know, but I guess I've been really lucky. I don't think I've ever had a piece of luggage lost by an airline.
Touch wood.
Touch wood.
So here's some right here.
It doesn't happen too much. It doesn't happen too often, rather.
It's
when
rare.
It does.
It pisses you off.
Yeah, exactly.
I could not even imagine what would happen. I'd be, like, devastated. I don't know what I'd do. I mean...
It's happened a fair bit to me. And it happened when I went into Israel, and it was gone for 48 hours. And it was a whole other story, which we'll do in another show, because it was security checked and detained on the way into Israel. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But it was annoying. And 48 hours later, my luggage arrived. And it was there. Things were stolen out of it, you know. And unfortunately.
Oh, that's frustrating.
Yes. No. It was in Bangkok that it happened.
Crazy.
But I got it back. The airline did the right things, and it was great. Just a bit of a nightmare.
It's
really.
Just a hassle. It's happened to me once, but it's just you need the things that are there. You need your toothbrush.
You feel violated.
Yeah, you just don't.
Like, where's your stuff?
You know? It's just annoying.
The last people it happened to that I know were my cousins and they're twins. And so one lost the bag and basically it's just like, well, I'm taking your stuff. Yeah. And everything worked out.
But you know, that's why it's important to have an inventory of what's in your suitcase. I do that now wherever I travel. I have a complete inventory of what's in that suitcase so that if I need to make a claim on the insurance, it's easier to do that. And that's why it's important to keep receipts for the higher value
you
stuff.
You sound very organized.
You have to be.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, you have to be. So
You heard it first here from a travel expert.
That's it, yeah.
Tad's had a lot of experience with that lately. So next week we will be going to Sri Lanka.
Exciting.
So that will be really, really fun.
Yeah.
And so, Ethan, I just want to say a big, massive thank you for coming
yes.
in.
Yes, exactly.
I think that we've tuned and turned some people onto July Luggage, even if they were too crazy to win it.
That's right. And Paul, thank you for helping us out
You're
today.
You're very welcome. It was enjoyable to be here today. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you, Fiona, always.
Oh, no worries.
I'm not here next week. I'll be in Brisbane, but I'll be here for the following week.
All right, great. Well, thanks, everyone. We'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.